W4DJW, W4DJW, KZ4TMA.
TMA, W4DJW. Hey, Simon, I'm about to the transfer station, so it'll be kind of brief, but then I'll be back after I unload.
Hey, Dave. All right, no worries. I'm sitting tight for a while, so I tell you what, I had a question for you, and if you don't mind, just holler at me when you get back in and have maybe 3 minutes or so. I'm on Echolink, so again, I'll miss the first second of each transmission, but I don't mind just sitting tight for a while. I'm just sitting here doing work remotely.
Sorry about that. I do tend to start talking a little bit too soon after I key up the mic. Bad habit. Anyway, I'll bring you back up when I get out of the transfer station. I'm turning in the gate right now, and it doesn't look like there's a line. W4DJW.
Sounds great. Glad I caught you. And KZ4TMA, standing by on Echolink.
4EJY Mobile.
KZ4TMA, Kilo Zulu 4TMA, W4DJW. You still around, Simon?
Hey, Dave. I'm here. How you doing today? Doing all right?
Good. I've been moving since 6 o'clock this morning, and it's 11 now, so I've got 5 hours of it down and haven't stopped yet. How about you? You having a good day?
Yeah, thanks very much. No, I'm doing well. Just getting some work done. As you, we may have talked about this before, but I work from home, so comfortable day, but another benefit of working from home is that no one's looking over your shoulder, so every now and then I do a little bit of radio shopping online between calls, that kind of thing. So anyway, I threw your call out because I wanted to ask your advice on an HF rig that I'm thinking about buying. So if you got a minute, you came to mind, I just thought I'd ask you before I do anything silly. So you got a minute?
Home from the transfer station, it's just me and the dog, so she doesn't mind. Go ahead.
All right. Well, you can thank her for letting me rob your attention from her for a minute. but no, thanks. So I've been I told Gary recently to put me down on the swap net as someone who's looking for just a starter HF rig. So, you know, I'm usually on my mobile rig. I've got a dual bander Yaesu that I've really enjoyed, and I'm thinking about getting into HF. You and I were talking recently about HF antennas, and you reminded me that I could use my attic space. So anyway, that just got me more excited about trying out HF. So anyway, I'm looking for HF rigs, and I see a pretty good deal online for a Yaesu FT100, which looks like it's HF and UHF VHF, and it's mobile, so it's not too big or clunky. It's probably got more features than I would know what to do with. I'm really just trying to mess around on 10 meters because I only have my technician license right now. But I was wondering what your thoughts were on that unit. If you, you know, do they have good reputations? Would you recommend them? And the price right now is, I mean, we'll see. We might negotiate, but it's with shipping, it's probably going to come out somewhere between $450 for what looks like a very good condition Yaesu FT100. Just eager to hear your thoughts.
So I don't have any experience with that particular radio. I do have Yaesus. I've used Yaesus for VHF and UHF a lot. And I have one HF radio, Yaesu, the 897. So that's my only reference point, is the FT897, which is kind of like a mobile 857, except it's more for backpacking because you can put batteries in it. It's all self-contained. You can transmit 20 watts for a few hours on internal batteries that it has. So it's a good radio. I usually have more luck with Kenwoods and ICOMs than I do with Yaesus when it comes to HF. That's when I was using hardware-defined radios, and then I switched to software-defined radios for HF, and I haven't looked back. So I'm kind of not a good person to ask about hardware-defined radios. That's the predecessor to software-defined radios, because I haven't been using them since I switched over for HF. Yaesus for VHF and UHF, they're great. My 897, if I had to pick between ICON, Kenwood, and Yaesu, I would probably go with my Kenwoods first, and then the ICOM, and then the Yaesu. I'm just being honest with you. But now I know there's a lot of people out there that, you know, everybody's got an opinion, and there's a lot of people out there that's like the top-of-the-line radio in their opinion. So don't just take my word for it. Ask around. Ask other people as well.
Yeah, okay. Really helpful. No, I get it. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the only reason I'm looking at Yaesu right now is my first unit's a Yaesu, and so I'm just kind of, you know, familiarity, or just even just kind of down to menu style, that kind of thing. Whenever I'm faced with a bunch of options, I usually try to look for something to narrow down the range because I just get overwhelmed. So, you know, like when it was time for our family to shop for a minivan, I thought, well, look, I like my Toyota Prius. Let's just get a Sienna. At least it just narrows down the range of options. So anyway, I was just starting to look at Yaesus, and just, you know, it makes a smaller pool of different units to get my mind around and research. Anyway, so tell me this, though. Yaesu or any other brand, when you see that a unit is HF and VHF and UHF, and it's mobile, I mean, this is a relatively small unit. It's, I think it looks fairly similar to the 897. I think I was also looking at 891s. Anyway, this is a relatively small mobile unit. I think it has a detachable faceplate. But no matter what the brand, when you think of a mobile unit, it can do up to 100 watts, and it does HF and VHF and UHF. Does that usually sound appealing to you, or does that sound any alarms like, you know, a monobander is going to do better at what you want it to do? You're just curious, like, any general guiding thoughts you got on this kind of thing.
I've always been one for, you know, pack as much as you can in as small a space as you can pack it, right? In fact, in my opinion, one day, the whole radio and everything for all of the different frequencies will be a lump in the coax. You'll have a microphone. It'll have a cable that goes to the lump in the coax, and then the coax goes to the antenna, and that's it. So the less there is to the radio, and the more the radio can do, the better. I don't like the big, huge rigs with lots of knobs and buttons and, you know, graphical displays that are of compromised quality when you compare them to a PC screen. I just don't go for that. And I'm very opinionated, and it's probably not good for everything that everybody else wants, right? That's just my opinion. So I'm not a good one to ask. But one thing I did think about is, I lined up a long time ago, this is like 15 years ago, I lined up my Kenwood, my ICOM, and my Yaesu. They're all sitting up underneath a shelf, side by side. And I tuned them all to the same frequency, and they were all on an antenna switch. And I was listening across all of the bands, and I would flip from the Kenwood to the ICOM to the Yaesu, and from the Kenwood to the ICOM to the Yaesu. Then I go to another band, and I tune in on a good signal, and I go between the Kenwood, the ICOM, and the Yaesu. The Yaesu was always the least receptive of the other, of the all three. Usually the Kenwood and the ICOM would swap places, but the Kenwood or the Yaesu was always last. And then when I switched to software-defined radios, it's a totally different ballgame because you can see them on the spectrum scope and you can do a lot with shaping the signal after it gets in and the audio after it gets, you know, past the signal. So that changed everything. I didn't go back. I didn't look back. So I would recommend that you know, throw that out there maybe on the net as well, or ask other people, because I have a very narrow view of what the radio ought to be. And for me, the more they can do and the less space they occupy, the better you are.
Okay, I get that. And yeah, in a similar kind of way, that's what was attractive about this one. I thought, my goodness, if I can get on HF but still also have a VHF and UHF ability for my first base station, that sounds fun. Then I can just keep using this unit and start filling up my attic with different kinds of antennas for different frequencies. And I'm sure that someday I'd outgrow the unit or want something else, but it seems like right now it would just do so much more than I'm even ready to do. Let me ask this, you know, regardless of the brand, it's a good brand. You know, it's one of the big three. Does 400 to 450 sound pretty good to you for, you know, a Yaesu or, you know, again, whatever the brand is, mobile, HF, UHF, and VHF up to 100 watts on FM. And, you know, I think it only does up to about 25 watts on AM. But does that sound like a pretty good place to start, or does it sound like I'm paying too much or too little on this?
The way I would do that, and I am at home, so I could be overloading the Echolink receive antenna. I put it on as low power as it will go, so let me know if I'm over desensitizing the Echolink receiver because I'm co-located with it. But the way I do that is I go look at the MSRP on EHAM, That's the first thing. How much did it sell for when it was new? And then I go look at, swap net prices, right, to find out how old is that radio, how long has it been around, if it's a used radio, what are they going for? And you have to use Google to do that. There's no way to know. I mean, I know there's a brand new HF software-defined radio on the swap net. I don't know if Gary's got it listed on there, but I know there is one that's available. It's more like a QRP rig, like you can carry it with you when you go backpacking or something like that. So that might be one to ask Gary about if that interests you. But you have to research each one of them. EHAM is a really good starting place because it has the MSRP value on it, on each rig, and they also have comments about that particular rig underneath the MSRP value. So EHAM, if you can still hear me, the before DJW.
All right, thanks, Dave. No, you're not overwhelming what am I on? Echolink. you're from a through clear. If you hadn't even mentioned that, I wouldn't have known anything had changed. So thanks. I heard all that. Glad you reminded me of EHAM. Yes, I will do that. In fact, as we speak, I sold it up at the MSRP is $895 on that unit. So, but yeah, you're right. I'll check some other listings, whether it's eBay or EHAM classified, and just see what other prices it's going for. No, thanks a lot. I just kind of wanted to think out loud, and it was a little time sensitive because it's eBay, so, you know, there's an offer and a counter offer, and it's good for a day. So I'm just thinking about whether I want to jump on this one. Thanks a lot. I appreciate it. Thanks for the time. Good to chat. Next time we chat, I'll let you know if I went with this one or found something else. And I'm going to sit here and keep working, so I'll be clear after your final day. But if anyone else listening wants to tell me any pros or cons about a Yaesu FT100, I'm all ears. Dave, thanks again. Hope you have a good day. And, yeah, you've knocked out several hours already, so I hope the rest of the day is relaxing. Thanks again. I appreciate the time. W4DJW, KZ4TMA, mobile on Echolink.
All right, Simon, good talking to you. Yeah, my dog's getting anxious to get out of the vehicle, so I'm going to pull down in the driveway. I stayed up here at the edge of the driveway to stay as far away from that antenna as possible. But anyway, good talking to you. Looking forward to seeing you on my HF waterfall one day, no matter what rig you get. KZ4TMA, W4DJW, clear.
3JCA, KQ4CRG. KQ4CRG, monitoring the channel.
Yep. N4IQ, monitor.
N0TR, mobile. Again, Bill, we're headed home.
Got out about maybe 20 minutes ago, and I was talking to somebody on the phone, so I'm headed over to have lunch now. So how did the doctor's visit go?
Acknowledged that she regained, but he says the damage is done, but he says don't lose all hope. And he says I've seen people go ahead and recover some, but he said it's not very likely, to be quite honest with you. That piece of plaque went off and blocked the artery going to the retina, Bill.
Yeah, that will definitely do it. That's what happened. Well, that's what happens when you have detached retina. If it goes long enough, it doesn't take long, a day or so, the blood supply is cut off during that time, and those cells in the retina just die. So, let's hope though she'll get some more of her eyesight back.
For it, I'll tell you for sure. Well, when I was younger, I was working on an HVAC unit, and I had my head under it. This was at home. And I raised up and just bumped the back of my head. And, about 30 minutes later, after I got finished with that job, I saw thousands of little dots in my eye. And they said that's blood that's coming from a tear. And so the optometrist, I know, when he was a friend of ours, he come down that night about 7:30 and looked it over and sent me to a specialist the next day. And they took I think it was a YAG laser. It was green anyways. And stitched that up with that laser, you know, welded it shut. And I got 20/20 in that eye since they did this LASIKs and all, but it didn't cause me any loss of vision, thankfully. But I bumped my head harder than that many times, but I just hit it just right, I guess.
Well, whether it becomes detached, torn, or whatever, the more nearsighted you are and the older you get are two of the main factors. Well, yeah, you're lucky you kept your eyesight. You know, I've had two tears in my right eye, one tear in my left, and I can relate to all the dots that look in your eyes, and then the other thing that I still really see a lot of is really frustrating is all the floaters I have because of it. But they did the same laser surgery, tack welded them back. But I have terrible floaters. I just they're just. But that, you know, of course, I know I've told you about all the problems I have in my eyes. That's just a minor part of my eye problem. But anyway, you're lucky that you got your vision back like that. My stepfather had something similar to that, and he didn't go to the doctor. He was the most stubborn guy. He would not go to a doctor. Well, it eventually killed him. Not his eye problem, but he didn't go to the doctor. Wouldn't go. He told my mom about it, and he just, most stubborn guy I ever met. Anyway, he lost vision in one of his eyes.
And they say, yes, go immediately and get that looked at if that happens. And the quicker you go, the more chances of saving your vision is what they told me. And I was 2400 back then at the last, before I had my eyes LASIKed or whatever they call it down there. And it's been a real blessing to be able to see without eyeglasses. I still wear sunglasses, but they're not prescription. But I don't have to. But I'm real careful if I'm grinding or something like that. Never used to worry about it because I always had the company. They didn't exactly provide them there at the last. You had to buy them, but they was real, real cheap. And they come from a good optical company, Bausch & Lomb. And I had every color of glasses you could get. But back then, I didn't worry so much about it. But I got hit with 8 pieces of metal one day. Digger out in the road here, I got to slow down for. And they had to go in, and it looked like a center punch. He called it a burr, and get those 8 pieces of metal out of my eye. And they always ask you before you get an MRI if you got any metal in your eyes, you know. And so I'm glad he got them out, and that didn't affect my eyes. I was cleaning off a glass scale. It's a feedback device on a machine tool that tells you the position of the tables and whatever axis it's on. And I blew that off with an air hose, and I had on safety glasses, but I had to get down there to that little tiny pickup, and it got me. So, brother, when I go to grind or wire brush or anything anymore, I put on safety glasses.
Well, I have taken many x-rays of the orbits, they call it orbits, of patients that were going to have MRI, just as precaution to make sure there was no metal in there. And if you have metal in there, some shreds, or get the metal, because the eye tissue is so soft, it'll just tear them out of there.
Send your LTR. Well, you know, the thing of it is, Bill, I didn't realize it for several hours, and they say the metal starts to rust. But I went the next day. But with Bernice, they said if I didn't get her to an emergency room within an hour and a half, there was no hope of saving any vision in that eye. What had something. The doctors told us that. But they said, in reality, your chance of getting in and admitted to the emergency room and getting somebody down there knew anything about eyes, especially on, it was a Martin Luther King holiday one at Bernice, and he says, don't feel bad because you never got there in time. And I didn't know what to think about it, and I didn't... I kind of thought it could be that carotid artery, and sure enough, it was. And this Dr. McLean today, he said, I said, how often do you see this? And he said, oh, I see at least once a month that this happens.
It's too bad it happens that often. Well, blocked carotids are really common. Real common. When she had her carotid arteries check, did they use sonography or sonograms?
An ultrasound, which sounds like it might be the same as you're talking about, and they do a very thorough job down here at the Greer Memorial, and I've had doctors in the VA, and that one doctor in particular, heart doctor, he just put the transducer on your chest and look at it for maybe 60 seconds or so. Yeah, you're all right. Well, I knew he was a dud, so I canceled him out. But when they do a good ultrasound, it takes a half hour or more to do it correctly, and it's amazing. It's three-dimensional. It's in color. The parameters they gather are infinitesimal. I mean, they really do a good job. She had it done every 6 months. She had it done in October, and they said it actually improved a little bit, and it was 68%. But when we went to the emergency room 2 months later, it was 90%.
Things can change, you know. They could be plaque, you know, that came from elsewhere, just like the plaque they got in the eye. That came from the carotid, there can be plaque that moves in your circulatory system, and since it was already occluded, it could have built up more in that period of time.
No doubt about it building up, but they don't operate till 75%, kind of like the stent goes, or at least when I had mine done, it needed to be 75%. And the doctor, actually, years ago, back up in Missouri, come in the room. He said, well, to be honest with you, Bernice, he said it was only about 70, but he said I went ahead and put the stent in because of his age and that. And insurance wouldn't cover it unless it's 75. But that's been many years ago. So I was happy I had that doctor. He done a good job. But... yeah, I never thought about it coming from someplace else, but it'd been stable now several years. She had that ultrasound done, and you might go up just a little bit to where it got up to that 68, but just in 2 months to jump to 90, that seemed rather unusual. We can just hope she gets some of her vision back.
Yeah, ultrasound's same as sonography. You know, sonar, sonography, ultrasound, it's all the same. But there's different types of ultrasounds. There's, and these people, I tell you, the technicians, if you want to call them technicians, are a lot better than most doctors. You don't see doctors doing the actual exam, the ultrasound exam. Almost all times if you want to call them technicians, technologist is really the right name. Technician is somebody who makes glasses. That's what we used to say, technologist. But the training to get to the point where you can even stand for the exam, there's not just one exam, there's like five exams for the different types of sonography and anatomy these people have to be able to recognize and work with. Let me say it this way. Sometimes the sonographers are x-ray techs as well, but X-ray techs generally are, it's not the other way. These people are really highly trained. The exams are very, very hard. They, we trained them where, you know, where I used to work. And I taught a couple courses to them, some of the beginning courses. And it takes only the brightest and most dedicated people to become a sonographer, N4IQ.
Syndrome TR. I thought so too, because I'm always full of questions, you know, means we're in electronics and stuff. And this last lady that done mine, which I get them done every 6 months, I think, something like that. I think she said 2 years schooling, and then they have like an internship for quite a while, sort of like a residency, before they ever let them really do it. And she was sharp as a razor. And I mean, tell you, I could tell by the number of parameters and stuff that they were recording and how fast, you know, they're great typists, and they just absolutely are good people. And she's been doing it for like 10 years. So I feel very confident when you got somebody like that running that thing.
Yeah, you know, and they say 2 years, just like a tech. That course that I taught in, they say 2 year program, but it's 2 years year round, and it's seven semesters. You know, a BS is eight semesters. You know, and included in all that is all the, you have time there with the licensed sonographers learning all this stuff, and you have clinics. They used to practice on me. They'd want somebody, they'd be doing something, they'd be special, whatever they were wanting to do, and they needed a live subject a lot of times. They'd come to my office and said, "Bill, we need you." I said, "Oh, no." Take your shirt off. They'd work me over with all that gel and everything. I thought it was funny, but it's like a bachelor's degree. I mean, in essence, and it's a lot harder. It's not like taking a history course. This stuff is really hard.
All the people in the world would know it would be you, Bill. And I'm glad to know that, though. And I have a real respect for them. But, you know, they're not the good Lord, and they can't explain why these arteries and vessels do things like that all at once. But it just ticks me off when you're getting things checked and things are going good, and then, bang, you get hit with that. So life goes. But, you know what, it could have been much worse. Could have went to her brain. And she said I had no danger of that part, but actually I told her that, but then I got slapped, so you know how that is. Not really, just kidding. But, that had been horrible. Her sister had those TIAs, mini strokes, and she wound up in a rest home, and it was pitiful, it really was. And she was a farm girl, tough as nails, and all it takes is something like that to bust loose and hit you in the brain.
Longer you live, the more chance something like that happening. You know, a lot of it's just age-related. Like my eyes, most of that's age-related, but not all of it. Well, I'm here at the restaurant, so I'm going to say 73s. Y'all have a good drive home. Talk to you later, N4IQ.
Okay, Bill. Well, I remember now that doctor saying I did have glaucoma, but very, very minor amount so far, and my pressures in my eyes are all good, and they did that goniometry or something. They cut a little hole in there so it'll keep the pressures level. When they did that laser surgery, they did that at the same time, and so they ought to give you a good used car for what it costs, but I'm glad it was done now, because maybe that'll slow down the progression. Great talking to you, Bill. Have a nice meal, and we'll 70, you say 73, and talk to you later. N4IQ, N0TR, clear.
W5MSC, W4DJW.
W5MSC.
They stop at the church up here on 290 right before I get to Mush Creek. Just let you know, I looked it up on the Google Maps and I know exactly where it is. I know exactly how to get there, so I'll see you in just a couple minutes.
Be safe. See you when you get here. W5MFC.
W4DJW.